Accession number 18730, Reel 8.
Cox Reel 8.
Well, this Meritius officer, as he supposed to be, trying to get to know where I'd got my information from. I denied I'd ever brought any such information in. And I realised that the officer I'd given it to had spilt the beans of where he'd got it from. And then this Meritius lieutenant, he started telling me about the Gestapo and how they questioned people. And they could get information. They even tore people's fingernails out and did all kinds of things to make them speak. And I thought, I'd been trying to crack my brain how to get rid of this man. And in the end, I said, what the hell are you on about? Are you gone round the bloody bend or something? Which was a particular thing that often people losing their head, going nuts. I said, I don't know what the hell you're talking about, man. I said, you must be round the bend. He then disappeared. Because I slipped up. We had all kinds of units among the officers. Intelligence group and all this kind of thing. I was able to tell them this, and of course they then realised why all their escape attempts had been foiled at the last minute. They'd dug several tunnels, and always at the last minute the German Abwehr came and discovered them. And it was this chap, he was a stooge of the Germans, Meritius. Who'd ever met a Meritius lieutenant before? And I think he knew the game was up, and he'd somehow got, must have had a signal, because four armed guards, Germans of course, fetched him out that afternoon. I think he was due for the chop that night. They would have found him hanging at the kettle. Anyway, we soldiered on a while in there, and we knew that eventually the Allies were closing in, the Russians were drawing nearer, and the end was come sooner or later. What would happen? Well, again, the intelligence group had been swapping ideas. One idea was that being mainly officers, of course, in this off-lag, there were, I believe, about 1,000, that the SS, an SS group might come and sweep them off into the Salzburg Mountains as hostages to save their own skins. If in that case there would be a signal given by one of the officers and we were to disperse, nothing you could do but get up and run, sort of thing. They said, possibly not many of us would survive, but if a few did, it would be better than none. Which they could see would be the result if you ever got into the SS hands. So much for that. They'd also acquired, and I don't know how they did this, but they had some explosive. And they had made, they knew how they could make, where they could get a piece of the water pipe out quick, and they could make a Bangalore torpedo and poke that through the wire in one particular place, and blow a hole in it. This in case the SS or any other such group came along and they thought they may, as a last resort, come and wipe the lot out, have a proper bloodbath, so you see, and shoot the lot up. And the third thing was, right near the hut for the other ranks, they'd acquired some wire cutters to cut a hole in the wire of surrounding these camps was a pretty formidable task. But anyway, if such of these SS looked like doing anything with us at all, it may be worth a chance. And they came to me, being the only Guards NCO in the camp, would I volunteer to be number one on the wire cutters? I thought, well, I'd as good dig the grave now if the case come to that. But anyway, what else can you do? Yes, I said, I'll be number one. And they'd, unbeknownst to any of us that occupied that hut, they'd got one window and every screw holding it in place was loose, and they could have dropped it in a matter of 2 minutes and out you could have got. But personally, I don't think it done us any good, but if the SS had come with any ideas of a bloodbath, it was getting nearer and nearer the end. And down in the village of Vinesburg, our camp was just on the edge of the village, was a company of SS troops came and billeted themselves in that village. They were there 3 days, and I, for one, was damn pleased when they went. I didn't know what they would mean in, but anyway, in the end, they brought a train along, and they hustled us all out, and we went to Moosburg camp then. Well, there they were gathering every prisoner in Germany, I think, in the Moosburg camp. It was a big camp, and it was when we weren't in it long before one morning, I believe it was Sunday morning, the 29th of April, I'm not sure, is that somebody went outside the hut. We were in a hut, so the Germans are gone. Of course, we all crowded out, and there were no sentries to be seen nowhere. But when they made their way to the gate, you wouldn't get out of that. There was a German tank, and who was sat on it but blood and guts Patton himself. And he apparently liked to get up front if he could, and I'd piled on. At that time there were a little group of us, 2, 4. One was an officer in the American artillery, and outside the gate was his own artillery group. They wouldn't let him out to rejoin his group, but they would give him a 10-in-1 ration or something. 10 men's rations for one day, 1 man's rations for 10 days, 10-in-1. So he came back in with that, and the 4 of us sat down and ate it, there and then. There was one of our British soldiers wandering about. They let odd people out. Of course, the Americans soon had they had sentries out. They wouldn't let anyone out. You couldn't turn that lot loose. It would have stopped the Allied advance entirely if they'd gone swarming across the country. But they let individuals out. They let one chappie, or two chappies out, because there was a piggery you could hear and sometimes smell not far off. And they let him go there, and their method of slaughtering a pig wasn't very humane, but they came back with it. They had no means of dressing it, hair and all the lot was soon roasting and stunk the camp out nearly. But there was another chappie that let a pole or something out, and he'd come back and he had a lovely stew going. Sat on the side of the outside hut, and one of our lads, he thought he, bah, it really smelt good, and he thought he would he'd see if he could beg a bit of this stew. Told him how good it's very nice and indicated, beautiful smell. And so he was offered some on a plate, and he enjoyed it. He then began to ask what what it was. Yeah, well, neither of them could speak one another's language, but eventually this Pole or whatever he was, he got the idea and he said, "Yup, yup, yup!" Which was imitating his pet dog at home, I think. And you can guess what the Englishman did with his stew. He'd eaten it, but it didn't do him a lot of good.
You mean he vomited it up?
Yeah, straight away. We wandering about, and I went round the German offices, and outside were stacks and stacks, literally hundreds, thousands of the prison record cards. They kept a record of every man, every prisoner. And I thought, blimey, why they'd carted him about Germany with them, I don't know at such a time, but they had, and they were there, chucked outside the office. And I gave a pile a kick, and the biggest coincidence of my life, I think, there was my card on the top, out of all these thousands, I haven't done. And so I had a nice little souvenir of my prison life.
Did he say anything of interest?
No, no. Only my next of kin, my regiment, and where I was captured, and that sort of thing. Fingerprints and that all on. No, nothing of interest, except it was mine. And well, we moved. The Americans moved us. In those, I think they were really made for fuselage of a aeroplane, moving them about. The pilot in them, eye-sided wagons, till they couldn't get another one in. We all stood there. You couldn't fall over. But there was darky boys driving them. And blimey, we rocked and rolled a bit. But anyway, we got to this camp, and where was this now? Oh, God knows. But they were ready to feed us, and they had a marquee set up there, and you filed through, and they were there providing us with mess tins and knife, fork and spoon, and boiled chicken, they said. The doc wouldn't allow us to fried chicken. And as you went out, there was a packet of candy and some cigarettes, and really made us welcome. And then we're taken to a little aerodrome called Landshut. Landshut Aerodrome. It was only a grass runway. They said the DC-10s, Dakotas or something, twin engine jobs, they would fetch us. And eventually we were grouped up into groups of 32. These planes began to arrive. Well, they were following one another out of the sky and landing down this one aerodrome, taxiing to the side and parked up alongside the runway. No one could take off because there was always one ready to land. Until, I don't know, there were dozens and dozens. I wouldn't like to guess how many aeroplanes they got there in the finish. And we started the next morning anyway to loading these up and take it off. I think the first or second plane, I can't remember quite, was 32 on board. Tearing down the runway at full throttle, and across the end was a kart track which was raised up about a foot or 18 inches. And he didn't get his undercarriage up, and it just clipped this kart track, threw gravel up in the sky. So they immediately decided it was overloading. We had to regroup then from 32 to 26. There was one plane had landed, and he had a Dickey engine. And as these were twin engine jobs, the mechanics worked on it, what they'd got there, all morning, passed it fit to fly. So it was loaded up. And he went, got about full boost halfway down the runway, when this engine cut out again. Before the pilot had time to switch off his good engine, it sweared him into those, parked on the side, and up went four aeroplanes in one cloud of black smoke. Oh, the lads had all piled out the back door before the big fire, but that was okay. But it did delay job. They wouldn't allow any more take off until that fire had died down then. So we got a bit of a delay there. Eventually, along came our plane for the group I was in. One of the crew opened the door, which was on the back end of the fuselage. "You guys want to come with us? You've got to help me unloading it." And it was full of cans of petrol. Those cans that always leak. And we got a sort of a bucket chain going. We unloaded this petrol and started to pile in. And you could hardly breathe for petrol fumes. We got loaded, and one of our crazy gangs said, "Can we smoke in here?" Oh, dearie me, we're on the way home, I thought. And, guess you better wait when we get upstairs, I said, and then there ain't nobody there to stop you. So we waited, and this bloke, okay now. I sat there with eyes glued on him when he struck that match with my fingers crossed, but anyway, you know, nothing happened. We got home. We flew to Reims Aerodrome. And they said from there, oh, the Americans were still feeding as well. And they said the Lancasters were coming for us. They were stripping the Bombays and they were going to come for us. This was this would be the 7th of May by this time. We got word that be official VE Day the next day, the 8th of May. That was big celebration day. Of course, the next morning the lads were up. We'd been sleeping out on the grass like just anywhere. Scanning the sky. I said, you blokes needn't be looking up there. I said, you ain't going to see no Lancaster bombers today. Why not? I said, where would you be? I said, the bloody pilots are all in the pubs. And there weren't any came that day. Not one. The next day, the 9th of May, the lads were looking up again. I said, you needn't be looking up there, I said. Why? VE's day's over now. I said, yeah, they've all got a bloody hangover. They won't dare fly the plane. So I said, and they didn't. They didn't come well the 10th. During that time, I think we were all VE Day, the 8th and 9th, we'd neither food nor drink. But me, for one, wasn't leaving it. I wanted the first plane back to England. And they came. We landed at Didcot Aerodrome. And some three-ton trucks took us across to a... What is it? This lady's... Welfare?
WVS?
That's it, WVS. And they had a cup of tea and a bun for us. And we then went to army camp where they fed us, bathed us, washed us and absolutely smothered us in DTT powder. We got, of course, the old standby, British Army, cottage pie for supper that night. We did better with the Yanks, actually, but of course they had more grub somehow. They could get it out there to their troops. But they weren't long. That was the 10th of May. I remember riding across the aerodrome and I was stood up at the back end of this three-tuller, looking around at England as it is today, all beautiful and green. I said, you can take South Africa, North Africa, the Jordan Valley, where you like. This England will do me. I never intended leaving it again, but of course it took a long while before I did. Anyway, we were soon kitted out with clean uniform, new uniform, and some cash, and given a travel warrant home. They said, there was a train came in from Amersham Station. And they loaded it on it, they said, it's going north. It'll zigzag across the country. When you think you're near home, get off it. Well, we got to Retford and I got off. Eventually caught a train that brought me through to Stallingborough Station, headed for Grimsby, and I got off. The funny thing, and I spoke to several ex-prisoners after that I rode in that train, and as it got nearer my home village, I could see the fields I played in as a boy and knew I was getting home, and there was nothing within me at all. You might have thought excitement, exhilaration, nothing. I'm just riding along. And other prisoners said they felt the same. They had no feelings as they got near home. It was strange, that. But I got home and there were soon some visitors coming in to look at this exhibit. I think they all thought they were going to see one of these Belsen skeletons or something, but funny enough, before the last month before we'd left the prison camp, the German camp, four of us each day had to go into the German kitchen and peel potatoes, which they boiled in the jackets. There was never any large potatoes. They were only as big as a small hen egg. And they tipped this copper full of potatoes. These were for the German soldiers, like, but in a tub. And we had to peel them. So the first 30 that I peeled, I eat myself. I said, I'd do that every day. And I did. Anyone that hasn't been well fed, or any animal, when you start feeding it like that, they pile it on immensely. And I really was looking quite well and fit and living out on Reims Aerodrome the beginning of May in the sunshine. I was looking really well, and I think I was rather disappointed to the friends and neighbours that came in to see me and visit me. I think they were really disappointed, but I'd enjoyed those potatoes. In that German kitchen, there were three old ladies worked. And we went in there every morning for a month. We used to say good morning, and not one of them dare speak to us. They literally dare not speak to you. When we left, after we'd finished our chore, we would say, Morgan. They don't speak. They just stood there, which speaks how the German population was beaten down to such a... But we were in the corner of the kitchen, more or less out of sight. And the first morning we were in there, one of these old ladies had walked right round the back of us. Never spoke. But when she'd gone, there on the ledge behind us was a handful of salt. She knew we wanted that for our potatoes, and she'd brought us it. But she still didn't speak to us, but she'd risked dropping that salt there. Where do we go?